Hello, welcome to Sydney's commentary for New Year's Eve 2013. I'm Robbie Kazik and I'll be taking you through the events of the night with my co-host Nastasia Campanella.
Call me Nass, Robbie.
Nass. I like that. It's catchy. Very nice.
Thanks.
Nass, you talk about what's happening in Sydney almost every day.
I certainly do. I'm totally blind myself and I have been since the age of 6 months old when I lost my vision. And I use 2RPH's news program service, which basically means I can listen to the newspaper.
Which makes you the perfect candidate to take us through the evening and help other visually impaired people be part of Sydney's New Year's Eve celebrations.
That's right. Throughout the night, we'll also be joined by our producer, Miles Martignoni.
Hello. I've had a lot of fun going out and about, meeting people all over the city so they can tell you their stories.
I'm looking forward to it. There's so much going on.
And it's all set to a theme.
That's right, shine, because Sydney is a city that truly shines.
The theme this year represents everything from the way the sun glints on the harbour waters to the sparkle in the eyes of Sydneysiders. And tonight, the glow that will be all over the harbour when the fireworks go off.
I can't wait for them to go off.
But before we go down there, you'll hear from a few people.
People involved with the celebrations who can pull back the curtains and give us an insight into what New Year's Eve in Sydney is really like.
First up, we have the Lord Mayor of Sydney, Clover Moore. Right, Miles?
That's right. Actually, early on, I went up the sandstone steps into Town Hall to talk to her about New Year's Eve. And, of course, as usual, Robbie, I asked her the tough questions.
That's right. Just like any hard-nosed journalist, you started by asking her what her favourite part of New Year's Eve is.
My favourite memory, and the thing I enjoy most about each New Year as Lord Mayor, is the Lord Mayor's picnic in the Botanic Gardens, and that's for children with special needs. About 1,000 come with their family and carers, and it's an incredibly happy event. And then we all go down and have a look at the 9 p.m. fireworks before they go home. It's something that those families treasure for the whole of the new year. For some of those children, it's their only outing of the year, so it's incredibly special.
So why don't you tell me about what is it about New Year's Eve that Sydney loves so much?
Well, where does one start? Sydney loves New Year's Eve because it's focused on the most beautiful harbour in the world. I think we probably have the most talented pyrotechnics in terms of the Foti family who put together our fireworks. And each year we have a special artistic ambassador who oversees the creative effort. And Reg Mombasa is their chosen artistic ambassador for this year. Reg Mombasa is a quintessential Australian, very quirky, very talented. There are those two magic moments of 9 p.m. and midnight when the fireworks go off and people see the bridge effect. We have, over 1 million people around the harbour. Showcase it to 1.5 billion people around the world. And this year, I think, will be very, very special.
The city puts a lot of resources into this event. And it seems to be that you feel that this is also really good for Sydney in general. Why is that?
We do, every year there'll be a letter in the paper criticising me for, spending money on fireworks. But the thing about the Sydney's New Year's Eve, before the City Council began to put on this event, it was really unpleasant in Sydney. There was really ugly, dangerous scenes at King's Cross and the Rocks. So by providing a focus for people to come, it provides a safe but very inspiring environment. It costs us $6 million to put it on, and we've worked out that that's about $5 per person for 8 hours entertainment, so we think that's actually pretty good value, given especially that it's worth $156 million to the state's economy. So there's no economic argument for not doing it.
City of Sydney is putting in a lot of effort to try and include as many people as possible. Mm. Can you talk a bit about why this is important?
It's one of the priorities we have at the city. We want the city to be accessible to people all year round, including New Year's Eve. We've increased the number of spectator service staff who can give people information to help them. We have step-free maps showing what sites and routes are easily accessible. We're producing an audio description of the fireworks so that people with visual impairment can imagine what other people are seeing. The wonderful thing about it is that we have people of all ages and all backgrounds, and it is probably the most inclusive event that happens in the country.
If you were to pick one song or one musical act that might kind of describe the spirit of New Year's Eve this year, what do you think that would be?
Well, it'd have to be a Reg Mombasa inspired piece of music, probably from his current band, Dog Trumpet.
Dog Trumpet with Speed of Light.
That's Reg's band, isn't it?
That's right. Reg Mombassa plays in Dog Trumpet. But he started out in Mental as Anything and has been an iconic Australian artist. His work with Mambo is recognised around the world and he's actually the creative ambassador for Sydney New Year's Eve.
I can't wait to hear him later on, but first, I really want to talk about all the fun stuff that's been happening down on the harbour.
You're right, it's actually been a busy afternoon and evening down there.
I was down by the water, the Savo, and this super speedy plane was just buzzing all over the place like a bee.
That would have been Matt Hall. He's an ex-fighter pilot who's flown in the Red Bull air race before, and he's meant to be an amazing pilot.
He's fantastic. He flew so low that he could almost reach out of his tiny little plane and touch the water, and then he'd sort of turn his plane straight up and make it actually hover in the air vertically like a helicopter. It was crazy.
I can't even imagine how you make a plane do that.
There was also this renegade boat shooting water everywhere.
That would have been the Ted Knoffs. It's a fire tug that comes out and entertains the crowd.
Yeah, there are thousands of people lining the shore, camped out with eskies, umbrellas, chairs, and enough food to last them through to the big show. People come in early in the day and stake out the best spots, and when the tug came by, everyone stood up to get a closer look. It's huge. It's like two stories high, and you could park four cars end to end from back to front. The water shoots out like 20 or 30 metres out from the boat. And they don't just shoot it in one direction, they turn the jets around and around. It's like a tornado of water.
There certainly has been a lot going on there. To find out more about what's been happening, we sent our producer Miles to talk to a few people involved in the events.
At 6 o'clock, we saw the first acrobatic flight by Matt Hall and his companion.
they fly their two planes down into the harbour, but coming in from opposite sides straight at each other. And then, well, I think Matt says it best.
We'll both have our smoke on, so everyone will be able to see us. And we will be seeing the flotilla of boats out there. It's quite an amazing scene. Every year I'm just amazed by how many boats are out on the harbour, not to mention the number of people that are on the shoreline. And it's quite a spectacular view from my point of view above the harbour. Very unique situation to be in. And we're going to basically take both of those aircraft and we're going to create patterns in the sky with our smoke trail. And we'll be flying around in close formation. We'll be flying around in loose formation. We'll be flying independently of each other at times as well, just entertaining the crowd and really just demonstrating, you know, how fast these planes go and how maneuverable they are in that situation. And that first display will last about 10 minutes. It will conclude with us doing a bit of a drag race with both aircraft up the harbour and then flying back out over the northern pylon and Sydney Harbour Bridge in close formation, and we'll head back to Bankstown.
While they flew back, the fire tug came out, and I know Obi was very excited about it. It showered the harbour with water while it did a circuit, kind of trying to get in front of as many people as it could. Then the next thing that happened was the smoking ceremony, out on a barge in the harbour. During this traditional Aboriginal ceremony, you could see a tower of smoke coming up from the water. But then soon after that, Matt Hall came back in his plane, this time just on his own.
But for the display itself, I'll be coming in exactly the same way, down the Parramatta River at 500 feet. I'll overfly the southern pylon right at 8 o'clock, at 8 p.m. And then I'm going to do a quick orbit around the harbour to make sure everything's in place and everything is clear. And then I'm going, as long as everything is in order, I'm going to dive down to about 10 to 20 feet above the water in front of the Sydney Opera House. And then perform a low-level aerobatic display between Fort Denison and the Opera House at altitudes down as low as 10 to 20 feet and up to about 2,000 feet.
And after having Matt Hall steal the breath out of everyone's lungs on the harbour, we've got to probably the most important event of the evening. The traditional welcome to country ceremony that's held at the Opera House. And this is sometimes known as the acknowledgement of country. During this ceremony, the original Aboriginal people of the land, who may also be known as the local custodians, are acknowledged as the traditional custodians of the land. To find out more about the ceremony, I talked to Matt Doyle, who performed it today in front of the Opera House.
Traditionally, whenever we would visit another clan or another language group's land, you had to be invited onto that land. You just wouldn't simply walk on and, you know, make yourself at home, so to speak. So that was one reason, to give the visiting people permission to be on that land. And it's also, a form of safe passage. So while you're on that land, you are, you know, you have to respect the laws of those people that you're on, the land that you're on, and it also gives you safe passage. For today, it's paying respects, I guess, to the original people of the land that you're on, and remembering the people that once occupied that area and lived there and called their home.
Can you tell me about who the custodians are here where you do the ceremony?
Well, this ceremony happens on the land of the Gadigal clan, who are one of the many clans that make up the original Aboriginal people of the Sydney metropolitan region. It's a metropolitan local Aboriginal land council, is the area in which the Gadigal clan comes under.
Can you describe the ceremony that you'll be performing?
Our ceremony is in two parts. The first part is a welcome song, which is a welcome to country song, to welcome everybody to the Opera House or to Sydney Harbour. And that's done. That starts by calling off, by calling through song, the four main language groups that make up the Sydney region. So we call on, you know, the people or the spirits from the north of Sydney, from the west, from the east, and from the southwest of Sydney. So we're calling on them to be with us, and also acknowledging those four language groups, for like four tribes, if you like, that make up the Sydney region. So that's acknowledging them and asking them, you know, permission to be here and to perform ceremony. And we welcome people or visitors as friends and embrace them as friends and extend our hands of friendship. The second part is also a welcome to country, if you like, but it's done in a contemporary way. So it's contemporary music, it's contemporary dance, and it's pretty much the same as the traditional welcome, except it's done in a contemporary way.
Hey, you children, on the land, don't be fooled by the bottom of the waves. It will cause sorrow and woe for our people.
So as you can see, there's a lot more to New Year's Eve than just the fireworks.
You are on 2RPH listening to the 2013 Sydney New Year's Eve commentary. We're taking you through not only the fireworks, but also all of the other stuff that's happening tonight.
Yeah, and being visually impaired myself, it's really great to be here and to learn a little bit more about what goes on behind the scenes.
I think this is really special. It's fantastic to be able to bring the New Year's Eve celebrations to as many people as possible.
I'm usually with a friend or family member when I go out to a big event, but if I'm on my own, it can be really difficult getting on and off trains. There's so many crowds, people always stepping on my cane, and they're so noisy that I can't even hear the announcements. So it makes catching a train on my own pretty difficult when it's in a big event. But it's really good to see organisations like City of Sydney doing everything they can to include everyone in the event. I was actually curious about what else has been going on to make New Year's Eve more accessible. Miles prepared this report for us.
Hi, I'm Paul Nanari. I'm manager of the Event Access and Inclusion Project, and I'm very proud to be working with City of Sydney for New Year's Eve Access.
Tell me about why there's this push to make everything more accessible now.
I think there's more of a push to make things accessible because there's lots of legislation being passed recently, particularly the National Disability Strategy, which falls in line with Australia's commitment under the United Nations to increase the rights of persons with disability in Australia. City of Sydney is very, very passionate about ensuring that, you know, we provide as much access as possible to as many events as possible.
And so how does one go about to make events more accessible?
Generally, when you plan for access for people with disability or mobility support needs, you generally plan for access for everyone. It actually makes a better event for everyone. So we're talking about, you know, just ensuring that website has adequate information on accessible locations. You know, the City of Sydney website is a fantastic reference to find out where to go, what's accessible, what's not. Also working with, you know, other agencies in regard to transport options in and out of the city. I mean, transport in and out of the city is a major issue for everyone. So it's just about providing all the information that's out there that all the other agencies have that may not be filtering through to access guests who may require the information on this evening. The City of Sydney website has a concise reference of all the areas within the Sydney CBD that are accessible, and within that context or on that site, there'll be maps that show step-free pathways. So you can pretty much plan your journey from your point of origin, which is home, to a point of your destination point in the city. So it might be one of the major train hubs if you're coming in by train, and you'd pretty much be able to plan your journey from that transport hub to the particular viewing area or location in the city in which you're going to settle and celebrate New Year's Eve.
So it's obviously daunting to go out for New Year's Eve, and it's great to be encouraging more and more people to do that. But how can we make sure more people are included at the events that don't have to actually physically be there?
Yeah, New Year's Eve for anyone, particularly for parents with young families and also for the elderly and for people with disability, can be quite an intimidating kind of event. Just kind of working through the crowds, working through the transport options, and then also getting back home can be a little bit of a nightmare for people to kind of negotiate. So we want to make that process as easy as possible. City of Sydney have also got a dedicated resource officer who can actually customise an access plan for our guests coming in. So that hopefully will be able to assist, you know, for any issues that might arise on the night as well. And that's the great thing about this event in Sydney, is that the city's offered a number of options for people to enjoy the event and enjoy it actually from the comfort of their lounge room. So you've got your, obviously, your social media broadcast. You've got this broadcast that people are listening to at home, broadcast via TV. We've also got, obviously, accessible formats via we've got audio description via radio. We've got captioning. And actually, there's a great initiative on one of the pylons of the Sydney Harbour Bridge this year that's actually being that'll be in Auslan, which is fantastic to see. And again, a diverse range of communication tools for people who may not want to actually come into the Sydney but still want to enjoy everything that New Year's Eve has to offer.
One of the biggest challenges on New Year's Eve is getting 1.6 million people in and then out of the city.
1.6 million? How many trains must that be?
And buses and taxis and cars. Here's a fun fact. 1.6 million people is roughly the population of South Australia. So if you can imagine, we're squeezing all of those people into the harbour area.
It's an immense job, but to take a closer look at what's happening, we sent producer Miles to the Transport Management Centre.
I've worked on the New Year's Eve event for 5 years now, and let me tell you, one of the most amazing sights isn't down by the harbour, it's right in the middle of the city. You see, when everyone has filtered down into every nook that has a view of the harbour, a lot of the city is dead quiet, totally devoid of cars and buses and people. It's like being in the aftermath of a disaster movie, but, you know, without the stress of having actually gone through a disaster. To find out what it takes to empty a city as big as Sydney, I stalked the halls of the Transport Management Centre until I found someone with all the information. Their very knowledgeable spokesperson, Dave Wright.
New Year's Eve in the CBD of Sydney is by far the biggest event as far as integrated transport, road closures, impact to traffic that not only New South Wales but really Australia undertakes every year. This is an event that attracts over a million spectators, an event that closes over 30 kilometres worth of roads. We have pretty much every available transport service running, whether that be buses, whether that be trains, whether that be traffic controllers, traffic commanders, emergency services. This is a trademark event. It's an event that we're all very, very proud of. It's an event that takes an amazing amount of planning. Planning for this event is something that's been going for years and years and years. It goes back to the 80s. And after every New Year's Eve, every road closure, every water barrier, every element of this major event that people flock from not only corners of Sydney but around the state and even around the world. I mean, this is an event that's televised through, you know, all corners of the world. This event is pulled apart and we learn how to improve it for the following year. And so when people sort of say, how long do you plan for New Year's Eve in Sydney? Well, it's constantly evolving. Planning starts from New Year's Day the year before. It literally does. The staff that are involved are a wide range of staff, from the traffic controllers that are in place at the Transport Management Centre that are running the rest of the state, to a specialised transport operations room that look after just the closures for New Year's Eve. They've got responsibilities of making sure the traffic lights are running efficiently. We call them SCATs, which is the Sydney Coordinated Adaptive Traffic Signals. Now, what they do is they ensure that we ease congestion wherever possible because, you know, there very well may be a million people coming to the Sydney CBD, but there's also, you know, millions of people throughout the rest of the state that are either going to the Tamworth RSL to enjoy their New Year celebration, or they're going to the Lismore Workers' Centre and things like that. So we've got the whole state to run. So this is a major collaboration of not only members here at the Transport Management Centre, not only staff from Sydney Trains, from New South Wales Trains, from Road and Maritime Services, from police, fire, ambulance. This is a whole coordinated event that sort of takes place, I guess you could say, within the year leading up to the event. So it all starts a couple of days after New Year's Eve at the GCC, which is the Government Coordination Centre. There, at the Department of Premier and Cabinet, everything is discussed and thrashed out. This is what worked this year. This is what we need to do next year. And from then, the plans are drawn. And it's drawn with meticulous detail. Here at the Transport Management Centre, we have plans available that, I guess you could say, look like a telephone book, because that's how thick they are. Every single intersection throughout the CBD, every single intersection that's impacted in North Sydney, every intersection that's impacted around the Leichhardt area is meticulously planned. And it's meticulously planned for a couple of reasons. One is to ensure that we can showcase Sydney to the world. Two is that we can operate what is without doubt the biggest event in the country safely and get people in and out to the event. But thirdly, so everyone can have a really, really good time. And that's the most important thing. So we need to ensure that, you know, we spread the traffic volumes, we have the road closures in place, we have access to public transport, whether that be taxis, whether that be trains, whether that be buses, to ensure that people can get in there without too many issues and they can get out with too many issues. And amazingly so, you know, we get this million plus people on the foreshore of Sydney, and yet, you know, waiting times to catch a bus don't really exceed a couple of minutes. And the reason is, or trains for that matter, and the reason is because we do have every services. Sure, some people actually will be delayed a few minutes, but because we've got so many services running, you know, they move on relatively quickly.
And that's how you do it. Get over 1.5 million people down into places they can view the fireworks.
And talking about fireworks,
it's almost time!
Yep, in just a moment, the 9 p.m. family fireworks will go off and flood the harbour with colour.
You may be down there listening to the radio, in the car, or in the comfort of your own home, but wherever you are, we're bringing the show to you.
That's right, the two people most involved in making those fireworks go off are about to talk you through every bang as they happen.
We cross now to the audio description of the 9 p.m. family fireworks.
Oh, thanks, Robbie and Nass. I'm Anaren Coffey. I'm the producer of Sydney New Year's Eve. You can call me Nye. And I'm here with Fortunato Foti, the fireworks director for Sydney New Year's Eve. Hi, Fort.
Hello, everybody. Yes, my name is Fortunato, and Noah, you can call me Fortunato. Everyone else can call me Forge.
So, Forge, the stage for the show tonight is 7 kilometres long. We're using four barges. Down here at the Opera House, we've got a barge directly in front of us, just off Fort Denison. To our right, down towards Clark Island, there's another barge out towards the Heads. And then looking through the bridge to the west, there's another barge next to
Goat Island,
and then...
I thought I'd help you out there, no?
Yeah, thanks for that, Forge. And that's then right. Another one down near Cockatoo Island, which from the Opera House, you're really only seeing the high-level stuff for that barge.
So, now there's an interesting start to this show, and it's we're called the Ghost Shells. Now, these shells sort of...
These are brand new shells, aren't
they? Yeah, they're
a
brand new shell. They sort of come on, come off, and they gradually grow from one side to the other. So they sort of appear... as you can see.
Oh, yes, I can see they appear, start one side of the sphere and cut across in different colours. That looks amazing.
Yeah, and now we've gone into sort of a blue with midnight snow, which is like, how can you describe it? It's like a willow-type effect, if you can imagine the willow of a tree.
So lots of branches streaming down, and now we're into some nice large shells.
Yeah, these ones there, they're called aerial palm shells they're with a palm centre. So you've got a red firework and then the palm in the middle of it, and they change colour. And now we've gone into other shells that have different coloured centres. So we have magenta and on the outside and peach on the inside, and now we've changed from blue on the outside to red on the inside.
And we've got a bit of a palm coming off the barges as well, some ground effects down there.
Yeah, it all sort of adds to the different layers that we try and create within the fireworks. We've now gone into a nice yellow strobe, which sort of fits to the music. It's
absolutely
very soft.
Yeah. And then moving into some blue, what are these ones, Forge?
I don't know, I think you're telling a really good story at the moment, so I think just let you describe it. But they've gone from blue to magenta anyway.
Absolutely, palm shells. They're looking great. What's it like when you're programming? Is it about hitting the feel of the music or hitting the beats or a mixture of the two?
Try to do a mixture of both. Sometimes it calls to hit the actual beat of the music. The other one, sort of you're creating the mood with the fireworks with the music. So it really could be on a word or it could be on the way the music flows.
So for the instance just then, we had a key change and the change in the fireworks, dramatic change. We're now into some large orange shells over the harbour.
And now they've just changed again because the music's changed and it's gone into a like a lime. Which is, you know, that's what we're trying to do, is create the different effects. And now we've gone into the same thing, but in magenta colour. So there's various colours that we do and we try and change into.
And with the drop now, we've just gone into some very, kind of a bit more sedate fireworks, if there's such a thing.
Yeah, look, these ones here, they're sort of they go from a glittering white to a red to a blue. And they have like a strobing centre of the various different colours in the middle of it as well. So they call fireworks in Japan hanabi. Did you know that, Noe?
I did know that. What does that mean?
I don't know, but if I had to have a guess, I'd say it probably means flowers of fire. Does that sound pretty convincing?
That sounds pretty convincing, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty convincing.
Absolutely.
Myself.
So now we've had another change and we've got more of those kind of willow effects.
Yeah, willow. The gold willow. Gold silvery willow with a strobing centre.
They're and quite spectacular effects because you get the middle strobing and then beautiful tails coming down through the sky. And now we've moved to full horse tails.
Yeah, these ones here, if you can imagine the tail of a horse, but in the sky.
Absolutely. And they hang in the sky for a very long time. So now we've brought in some purple strobing shells and to complement those.
Yeah, as you can see, there was a sort of a key change and a different change in the music, so we changed the style of fireworks that we used for that. Again, trying to complement the music with the fireworks. Now, here's my cheesy moment with the sad face, but it's actually smiling.
Absolutely. We don't call you Forge, we call you Mr. Cheese.
That's the one. I think it's quite quite funny. And now we're back into some ghost shells. So these are the ones that sort of appear from one side and sort of gradually cross over to the other side.
And what are these ones, Forge? These look
These are butterflies with
green
eyes. I was
about to say, they look a lot
eyes.
Like butterflies.
These ones here are octopus with
blue helmets on by the looks of it.
Yeah. Hadn't seen that one before myself. Confused me. So we're now back into the palms. So as you can see, they've got tails that act as like the trunk, and then they burst into a palm shape with, and they're different colours. So we've gone from red to blue
to
green. So again, we're changing the fireworks with the key changes or with the different type of music that's being presented.
Absolutely. And moving into golds and more of the water level fireworks down there off the barges to complement. So how high are these fireworks going? They're
Yeah, look, the fireworks vary in size. They vary from 75 millimetres, which weigh about 250 grams, up to...
some beautiful of those octopus shells, were they there?
We've got these ones we call the octopus moving tentacles.
Fantastic.
Tentacles is the word.
Tentacles. Right?
Tentacles. So they go up to a height up to 350 metres from... 70 metres to 350 metres. So there is a big height difference. That's how we create the different layers that
use. Layering effect allows you to fill the sky too.
Yeah, is it hot in this room, Noi?
It is hot in this room, absolutely.
Do you think the listeners really care whether we're hot in this room?
No, I think they probably don't.
So now we've gone to a gold willow that changes colour at the ends. They change from gold willow to green, to gold willow to blue, gold willow to silver. So again, we have the same type of fireworks, but a variation of the firework. Again,
absolutely,
changing with the mood of the music.
Absolutely, and it gives a little bit of that point of difference across there.
Yeah, a lot of people in the industry, they might call it sort of colour blocking, so to speak, where they use the same type of firework for a period of time, but change the way that, or the different effect of that same firework.
Change the colour or change the actual individual effects.
I have no idea what I just said, Nye, but I think I'm sure it sounded okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so now we're back into the orange with the palm centres.
And with the change in music, we've changed shells again, and we've got some beautiful orange centres with quite a willow effect around them.
Yeah, we call these midnight snow with pistils.
There you go.
Yeah, it's one of those unique effects that they are long-lasting, but they're very pretty, as if they're sort of appearing and growing as they burst open.
Now I've got some big green shells up there, which are doing more of a strobe effect there.
Yeah, and from there we're going into what we call a brocade. Now, brocade is what we class as like a gold-silver willow. And there's
a
lot of
classical firework.
Yeah, long duration. Yeah. And as you can see, it's grown and grown and grown. And now that the music's changed, we've gone into something different. It's like a red strobe. So it's a red blinking firework that flickers on and off. And now we're into the finale. As you know, Noi, in the finale, we like to use a bit of excess of fireworks.
Absolutely.
To make it big.
Nothing succeeds like excess.
That's it. And they say the more the merrier, and in this case, the more the merrier is correct.
Absolutely. So the sky's absolutely full of fireworks at the moment on all levels, from the lower level fireworks that you were talking to right up to the 300, 350 metres.
And that's where that layering effect comes into play.
Absolutely. It's almost a visual overload.
And there you go. That's it. All done, bar the shouting.
Very well done, Forge. That was an amazing show, and I hope the people around Sydney Harbour enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping they'll enjoy that and wait for the midnight fireworks, which should be great.
Absolutely. We'll be back here again in a few hours and give another spiel for midnight.
Thanks, Noi.
Thanks, Forge.
Thanks to Fortunato Fotti and Aniron Coffee for taking us through the 9 p.m. fireworks.
They'll be back at midnight for the big show.
Aniron is an interesting name. How do you spell it?
A-N-E-U-R-I-N.
So it sounds absolutely nothing like it's spelled.
Not even close. But as you heard, his nickname is Nye. And how many producers' nicknames are the same as the name of their event? Nye, N-Y-E.
That's true.
Last year on the commentary, Aniron talks about how nice that coincidence is. In fact, we had such a good chat that we wanted to do it all over again this year. Here's my chat with Aniron Coffee, the producer of Sydney New Year's Eve. Nye, we've just had the 9 p.m. fireworks go off. Latest night, we're going to have the single biggest fireworks display probably in Australia. How many people does it take to put this all together?
Well, there's six of us that work on it full year, but then we've got about 93 people on staff for the City of Sydney at the moment working on the event, and about 1,000 contractors accredited.
It's a very long process, isn't it? Because, I mean, it all happens in... It feels like if you're down there on the harbour, it happens all in 10 minutes, it's all gone off. But it's a 15-month process, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, already back in end of October, we started looking at the themes and the bridge effect.
That's
and
2012, isn't it?
Sorry, 2013. In October 2013, we started looking at the themes for 2014 New Year's Eve.
Wow.
We've been well into that. We've been working with our creative team Imagination for a couple of months now on where that's all heading. We've got the master imagery sorted out and theming. And, yeah, now we start, once we've got this gig out of the way, we get into delivery for that one.
What's new this year? What's new this year about 2013 New Year's Eve?
The biggest thing which we've done new is probably firing from the Sydney Opera House. That hasn't been done for 13 years. It was done back in 2000, and we haven't got to play with the Opera House since. But this year we're firing from there, and that's something Fortune and I have wanted to do for a long time.
So if you are standing under the Opera House, everything's going to be okay. It's going to look like there's fire raining from the sky, but it's all right.
Yeah, yeah. If it gets a bit warm, move out of the way, but you know.
What's your favourite, personally, what's your favourite part about working on the event?
Oh, look, it's probably that moment at midnight when the fireworks have just started and have just gone off, and you hear that gasp around the harbour of 1.5 million people just absolutely awed by what's just happened, and that's pretty hard to beat.
We'll have a chat a bit later on. Thanks so much for talking to us on 2RPH.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Sydney New Year's Eve commentary on 2RPH. Here's Curtis Mayfield with Move On Up.
Destination, though you may find from time to time complication. We'll be right back.
Nas, have you ever been down on the harbour after the 9pm fireworks?
I certainly have.
What I really like about the harbour after the fireworks is that they put on this kind of boat thing full of boats with lights on them.
I think you mean the Harbour of Light Parade.
That's a great name for it.
What do the ships look like?
They glow. They're covered in lights and float around the harbour like big, majestic beacons. In the past, they've been all kinds of colours, red, blue, pink, but this year they're all a beautiful, glowing orange out on the water.
How big are the ships?
Between about 15 and 70 metres long.
That 70-metre one must be the Sydney 2000.
Yeah, when it goes past you, it's like a block of flats has decided to find a better place for its tenants. But there's a ship that's taller than that, the James Craig.
That's an old tall ship, isn't it?
It's so tall. It's got these three huge masts. The biggest must be 30 metres high. It's like looking at an old pirate ship or colonial vessel. It's got that old feel to it.
Well, it was actually built all the way back in 1872, so I'm not surprised. What does it look like with the lights on it?
All the ships have got their outline covered in orange rope light. It's like threads of light that go all around the shape of the ship. And on a ship like the James Craig, they have it threaded all over the masts as well. A lot of the ships also have the shapes of the Opera House sails made out of light on their sides. They've come from all four corners of the harbour. If you are down by the Opera House, you can see them drift up from the left.
From Sydney Cove?
That's right, but they also come up from under the bridge. At first, there's just these indistinct golden-orange lights. They could almost be one line or a cloud of lights floating on the water. But as they get closer to you, you start to make out individual shapes, start to see that it's actually separate floating vessels covered in light. You can see more and more of the details on them as they come closer. The Opera House sails on the side, lights going up the masts, and how the shape of the boat is perfectly outlined in light. And then all of a sudden, they're right on top of you. When the James Craig went past me once, I couldn't believe how close it could get to the walkway. It was towering over me, all 30 metres of mast covered in light as it slowly drifted by.
Wow, it sounds like quite a sight down there.
And the passengers on those boats are probably in for quite a show too.
Yep, later tonight we'll be hearing all the action of the midnight fireworks going off. But on our way there, we're going to take a look at what goes into creating all the images for the New Year's Eve fireworks.
Right now, here's Daft Punk with Get Lucky.
Like the legend of the Phoenix, huh, all ends with beginnings. What keeps the planet spinning? The force from the beginning.
Thanks again. We're up all night again. We're up all night again.
With Get Lucky.
You're tuned to 2RPH. This is the 2013 Sydney New Year's Eve commentary. You're with Robbie and Nass.
Robbie, I keep hearing about this crazy eye that's all over the streets, the one that Reg Mombasa designed for New Year's Eve.
Yeah, it's a big cartoony eye on a white background. Very much like a normal eye, that bit around the edge of your eyelid where you might wear eyeliner, that's pink. And then around the outer edge of the white of the eye, so we're going to move in, There's a light blue shading. The iris is blue, like a sort of dark blue, but divided into seven wave-like segments with little black lines. And in the middle of the pupil, there's this white glimmer, like a shine, if you will.
Wow, that fits our theme.
There are only eyelashes on the top half of the eye. So there are five long ones, equally spread out, with each long one having a shorter little eyelash to its left and to its right. At the end of each of the five long eyelashes is a little yellow circle with five short black spokes coming out of it. They look a little bit like fireworks. That's, I think, it's kind of the point. And it makes the top arch of the eye seem like it might just represent the Harbour Bridge.
That sounds amazing. Where can you see it?
It's all over the city, on bus shelters, on giant posters. It's on massive 10-metre-long flags around the city centre. There were just a few here and there earlier in the month, but now this eye is plastered literally everywhere.
It's interesting that Reg Mombasa has chosen that as the New Year's Eve icon this year.
Yeah, being able to take such a big idea like New Year's Eve and create this theme and icon for it must be really tricky.
They actually spend a really long time planning the creative side of things. In fact, they should already be planning for next year.
But how do they do it? How do they come up with the themes and from there create the artwork?
That's exactly what Miles is going to answer next. He talked to Reg Mombasa and a host of other people in order to find out where the vision comes from and how it goes from an idea to a fireworks display.
There's a lot of creatures like the kangaroo and the koala. There's even a panda bear in one of the panoramics.
He's also done a picture of an iPod, but his iPod is a bunch of human eyes within a pea pod.
Architecture, the iconic structures of the Opera House and the Harbour Bridge.
He takes inspiration from the a monkey over at Taronga Zoo who gets up, climbs up a tree every year and with a stash of bananas and watches the fireworks, but he's done it as a one-eyed monkey and eating the banana, checking out the fireworks.
That was Angus Kingsmill from Mambo and Lisa Taylor from Imagination. You may be asking yourself, what on earth are these people describing? Well, it's actually the New Year's Eve artwork that Reg Mombasa has put together for City of Sydney. But how do these images come together? Who is it that decides the theme for each New Year's Eve in Sydney?
We start the process of thinking about New Year's Eve in September for the following year. So it's around about 15-month planning process for the creative. The first thing we always do is come up with a theme, sometimes independently as imagination or sometimes alongside our creative ambassador. And then our process is really to find that ambassador. And once we've found the right person, then we work alongside them to develop the whole identity and mood of the event, both based on the theme and based on their own personality and type of creativity. So last year, working with Kylie Minogue was a very different feel to this year, working with Reg Mombasa, both in the way everything looks, but also in the whole mood of the music and everything else that goes along with the event. Hi, I'm Heath Campanaro from Imagination. I'm the creative director on the New Year's Eve project. And Imagination is a creative agency who have been working on New Year's Eve as the creative team for the last 3 years. As a creative director on New Year's Eve, you don't really get a better gig to work on. It's definitely our pet project for the year. Every year, we all love working on it and throw so much energy and passion and enthusiasm into the project. You know, how could you not love delivering a project on you know, the best stage in the world being Sydney Harbour? It's such an honour and such a thrill. You know, we have 1.5 million people turn out around the harbour to watch what we do. We have another 2.5 million watching at home on TV. And then, of course, you know, almost 2 billion people around the world see or hear about Sydney New Year's Eve on the news or watch it live around the world. And that's a really exciting thing to do. And I don't think there are many jobs in the world that give you the opportunity to deliver something on such a big scale.
So talk to me about the theming. How do you brainstorm a theme that captures the spirit of New Year's Eve?
Yeah, the theme's a really interesting topic. Coming up with an event theme for New Year's Eve is much trickier than you think. It always comes out as something really simple like Shine or Embrace or Time to Dream. But the thought process that goes into it is really extensive. The first thing is we need to come up with a theme that's really optimistic, something that we think is going to make people happy, it's going to put a smile in their mind, and it's going to really, I guess, start the year off with a really positive vibe. And the second thing is we need to come up with a theme that's universally acceptable. So it's something that kids can understand and embrace. It's something that adults at all levels can really say, okay, that makes a lot of sense to me. So it's really hard to kind of balance that, but I think the last 3 years we've managed to do a great job, and I think this year's theme of Shine really talks to Sydney. It talks to, obviously, our great weather, our sparkling harbour, and it also talks to the optimistic nature of Sydneysiders in Australia, and I think that's a really important thing.
What makes Reg Mombasa a great ambassador this year?
Reg Mombasa's just been fantastic. I think when we decided that we were really going to go after him and approach him last year, we all thought it was just going to be such a gear change from everything we've done in the past. You know, Kylie Minogue, as I said, she's a great pop star and a real icon in that sense, but Reg is an artist in a very different sense of the word. What we thought with Reg was we'd have a really unique style. You know, his style of art and music even is really, really unique, and we thought that will be a really big change for the event. So we gave him a buzz back in sort of November last year, and I phoned him up and I said, Reg, you don't know me, but my name's Heath, and I think you'd make a great creative ambassador for Sydney New Year's Eve. At which point I heard the phone get hung up on me. I think he thought I was a prank caller.
Let's take a look at one of Reg Mombasa's main artworks for New Year's Eve. It's a panoramic work. Down the bottom, he's put suburban apartments and houses, city buildings, factories, and of course the Opera House and the Harbour Bridge. Above them, you can see some fireworks, the glow of sunset, and then the sky goes from a light blue to a much deeper and darker blue. Up there near the top, you can see stars and planets and sky, and that's just the background. In the foreground, he's put 6 or 7 gum trees, but they're not regular gum trees. They have a lot of trunk, but not many leaves, because the leaves are just kind of like little green tufts at the end of branches. And in most of the gum trees, he's inserted the eye logo he created. It looks like it's actually growing in the middle of the trunk. Many of the trees have his cartoon animals on them, like a one-eyed koala, kookaburras, cockatoos, and other animals. I wanted to find out more about his art, so I gave him a call and asked how he'd describe it.
I do a lot of landscapes which are sort of more, I guess, more sort of figurative or realistic, but to describe them, the more sort of graphic work I do, it's often a fairly heavy black sort of outline, key line you would call it, with some shading and moulding, and I mean the subject matter is really sort of pretty much everything around us, like suburban and rural landscapes and suburban houses and things like telegraph poles and some of the native animals are often modified or combined, like there's one I do which is called the kangaroo, which is, that's pronouncing kangaroo with a New Zealand accent because it's got a kiwi's head and it's got the kangaroo body. So some of them are kind of, you know, ridiculous modifications of animals and people often. So generally I guess sort of popular culture is a lot of the subject matter of what I do, as well as landscapes and some religious and historical references in there.
His favourite way of putting together art is actually using charcoal.
You know, when I was a kid, I only ever had, you know, like HB pencils, which are pretty light sort of grey line. You don't get a great heaviness. But with the interesting thing with charcoal is, I mean, I use charcoal pencils, which is a more compressed charcoal, and you can get a neater line and a very hard line if you need it, but I really enjoy using the charcoal sticks because they're quite they're more expressive in a way, because as you use them they often break and crack, and so you get the interesting lines coming almost accidentally from the charcoal sort of doing its own thing, and in a sense, I mean, you know, writing on a cave wall with charcoal is like the earliest sort of artistic expression that humans did, you know, getting a lump of charcoal from the fire and just drawing the picture of a reindeer or a bison or whatever on the wall was the earliest expression of art that humans did. I haven't proceeded beyond that to using the same material.
It's great to have everyone around Sydney brought together by a huge event like this.
It brings everyone together.
And with everyone all focusing on this one event, it's a great time of the year to bring important things to attention. Like the bubbles you get in tap water sometimes, making it look all dirty and cloudy. What's happening there?
Or perhaps a charity that does a lot of good in the world.
That could also work.
Yeah, which is why each New Year's Eve, a charity partner is chosen to be part of the celebrations. And this year, it's Engineers Without Borders.
Engineers Without Borders? What does that even mean? Are they like commandos who invade other countries to do clandestine engineering work?
Robbie.
Do they take it upon themselves to spontaneously build bridges in suburban neighbourhoods without paying attention to zoning laws?
Robbie.
Are they engineers?
Robbie. Who do we ask when we don't know something?
We're going to ask Miles, aren't we?
Yes, and he went to find out just what Engineers Without Borders get up to.
So, you want to know what Engineers Without Borders does? I thought the simplest way would be just to ask them. So I phoned up their CEO, Lizzie Brown.
Engineers Without Borders Australia is a member-based non-profit organisation that focuses in humanitarian engineering. So our purpose as an organisation is to help communities in circumstances of need access the engineering and technology that they require to achieve education, livelihoods and health outcomes. So in practice, what that means is that we partner with community organisations, both here in Australia and in six countries overseas, and then over a long period of time, we place volunteers within those organisations to help build their technical capability. For example, in Nepal, we've been working with Jyoti Technical Training College, so that young people, sometimes from very disadvantaged backgrounds, can be trained in areas like the installation and maintenance of simple solar systems. So over a period of time, we've worked with Jyoti to improve the quality of the curriculum there so that the students, when they graduate, can deliver very high-quality solar systems into communities across Nepal.
And so do you think people really realise how much difference this kind of basic engineering work can make to people overseas? When I'm guessing these are things that people take for granted in their everyday lives?
Yes, I think most people are quite unaware of how critical engineering and technology are in meeting a whole range of basic human needs. The reality is engineering and infrastructure underpin our access to clean water, to sanitation systems like simple toilets on the trains, critical for energy supply, for infrastructure, for buildings, for shops, for housing and shelter, and of course for transport and communication. In fact, almost every facet of our lives is underpinned in some way by engineering and technology. And unfortunately, around the world, many communities experience a very significant gap in access to technology, which means that millions of people around the world, unfortunately, die each year of diarrheal-related diseases, they lack basic healthcare, and there isn't appropriate infrastructure for education.
Now, becoming the charity partner for the event, what does that do for your charity? What does it allow you? Who does it allow you to reach?
Engineers Without Borders here in Australia is very proud to be selected as the charity partner for the City of Sydney New Year's Eve celebrations because it means that we can showcase the important role of engineering and technology in creating a better world. For example, here in Australia, engineering and technology can help Aboriginal communities put simple small-scale infrastructure on traditional land so that community can return to traditional land to practice cultural traditions and participate in natural resource management. So for us, it's a wonderful opportunity on New Year's Eve to tell the world about our work and also to more broadly celebrate the importance of engineering in creating social change here in Australia and right around the world. At each of our pop-up sites, people can come and learn about our work, and we've got some different hands-on and very engaging activities for people to come and get involved with. So at 255 George Street at NAB House, we actually have a giant toilet. This stands a couple of metres high, and people who come past will no doubt see the toilet and be quite surprised, and that provides us with a wonderful talking point about the role of sanitation in supporting healthy communities. We also will have a Lego wind turbine there, and throughout the course of New Year's Eve, people coming past will be invited to pick up a Lego brick from a big pile and then actually help us construct a 2.1-metre functioning wind turbine. Wind energy is a very important source of renewable energy that we're supporting communities to access around the world. And on New Year's Eve at that particular site, people can come past and learn about wind technology and actually help us build a turbine that will rotate and power a light bulb at the end of the night.
That sounds like a lot of fun stuff there.
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit about the solar cookers? Like, what exactly is a solar cooker?
A solar cooker captures the sun's energy and concentrates it. That process usually occurs through a series of reflective panels, and through the concentration of the sun's energy, temperatures can reach in excess of 100 degrees Celsius, which is then sufficient for boiling water or for cooking food. Part of the reason that Engineers Without Borders was selected as the charity partner relates to the fact that it's actually our 10-year anniversary this year as an organisation. So as we celebrate the last 10 years of our work in humanitarian engineering, we're actually doing that on New Year's Eve against the backdrop of very iconic engineering structures in Sydney, that being the Sydney Opera House and the Sydney Harbour Bridge. It's also very important for us to reflect on what humanitarian engineering can provide to communities right around the world in the simple form of access to a toilet or access to clean water. We are using this as a call to action as well. So for listeners who are interested in learning more about our work, we have a lot more information on our website at ewb.org.au, and we are putting out a call to listeners to get involved in supporting our work, whether that's through making a donation or coming and volunteering with us as an organisation. And we welcome individuals of all levels of experience. We have lots of students as well as professionals supporting our work. Some are from engineering backgrounds, but many of our volunteers are non-engineers because we have a very high, will place a very high value on diverse skill sets in supporting our work.
You're on 2RPH listening to the Sydney New Year's Eve commentary with Robbie and Nass.
Right now, here's Haim with Falling.
Into the moment, like I'm standing at the edge. I know that no one's gonna turn me around. Just one more step, I could let go. I'm right in the middle. I hear the voices and they're calling for me now. I know that nothing's gonna wake me now. 'Cause I'm a slave to the sound. And they're calling, don't stop, no, I'll never give up, and I'll never look back. Just hold your head up, and if it gets rough, it's time to get rough. They keep saying, don't stop, no, it's never enough. I'll never look back, and never give up, and if it gets rough, it's time to get rough.
Was Haim with Falling.
You're listening to the New Year's Eve commentary on 2RPH with me, Nass.
And me, Robbie. Soon we'll be looking at how these very pretty but very volatile fireworks get put together. We'll find out who picks up the incredibly dangerous explosives and turns them into very pretty bursts of colour in the sky.
But first, we wanted to take a look at some other ways of connecting with New Year's Eve.
We've already heard that SydneyNewYearsEve.com has a lot of maps you can use to plan your way in, including maps that allow you to plan your way in if you have any special accessibility needs, like not being able to go up steps.
There's also an app for your iPhone or Android mobile, which you can use.
Nas, I'll need you to forgive my ignorance, but how do you, as someone who is visually impaired, use an app? I mean, you can't see the screen, can you?
No, I can't, but my phone has speech software on it, so it reads everything that's on the screen out to me.
Does the New Year's Eve app do this?
Yeah, it does, which is great, but I haven't actually used it much. So to find out more about the app and other ways New Year's Eve is getting out to people, we sent Miles to talk to the makers of the app, Telstra.
Hi there, my name is Sean Hall. I'm the General Manager of Brand Marketing here at Telstra. The official Sydney New Year's Eve app has got lots of different features. You just download it from the App Store, from Google Play or iTunes. You can do things like look at the newsfeed, which has lots of constant updates with videos and competitions. There's a competition in there to win a VIP meet and greet experience with Michael Bublé. There's maps which show you the different vantage points around the harbour. So these maps actually do two things. They show you all the facilities that are there available at that vantage point. And the second thing is they actually let you know as that vantage point is filling up. So you can see in advance whether you should go one place or the other. And you can also bank up to 50 free SMS that we'll send on your behalf at midnight. So you don't have to worry about the congestion or anything like that. You don't have to worry that your messages won't get through. Telstra will look after that for you. And the great thing is that it doesn't matter what network you're on. That is available to everyone, whether you're a Telstra customer or not. There's a great feature called Telstra Message the Bridge. What this allows you to do is to put in your special message that you might want to share with your loved ones, and up to 1,600 of those messages will actually be projected onto the bridge pylons. There's a whole bunch of different messages that go up. Last year we even had a marriage proposal. New Year's Eve is one of those moments of the year where everyone wants to connect. Telstra's really excited to be part of this celebration for the second year in a row. There's some great things that are happening tonight. At 10:30 we're going to see a young child's imagination really come to life. That's through our Designer Fireworks competition that we ran earlier this year. Kids under 16 were able to submit their designs. These were then judged by Fortunata Foti, who is the artistic or fireworks director for New Year's Eve. And then he's created that firework for them, and it's going to explode in brilliance tonight at 10:30. Right now we've got a live stream on our YouTube channel, so youtube.com/Telstra. The great thing about a YouTube show is that it means that even if you're not down on the harbour, you can really experience what's going on. There's a special performance from Empire of the Sun. We've got our host for the night is Merrick Watts, who will also be sharing lots of highlights from the year that's been, so we can reflect back. So we'll be asking people, you know, what are their favourite moments of the year? What moments have been shining moments for them via the social media feeds? So really, you'll be more connected to New Year's Eve and what's going on than you ever have been before.
You're on 2RPH listening to the Sydney New Year's Eve commentary with Nas and Robbie.
Here's All Night Long by Lionel Richie.
All night long, all night, all night.
Well, my friends, the time is come. Raise the roof and have some fun. Throw away the work to be done. Let the music play on. Everybody sing, everybody dance. Lose yourself in wild romance. We're going to party, caramba, fiesta. Forever, come on and sing along. We're going to party, caramba, fiesta. Forever, come on and sing along. All in their
let the music play on, play on. Feel it in your heart and feel it in your soul. Let the music take control. We're going to party, climbing, fiesta, forever. Come on and sing my song.
By Lionel Richie.
Nass, you've been down by the harbour when the fireworks go off on New Year's Eve. Tell us about what the atmosphere is like when you can't see anything.
Oh, look, it's wonderful. Obviously a bit different to what you would experience, but you just get this sense that there are so many people, and not only can you hear them screaming, yelling, you know, getting excited, clapping their hands, you can just feel that there's this sheer amount of people around you. And you kind of get goosebumps all up and down your skin when you hear the fireworks, and, you know, you can hear lots of bottles being kicked around on the ground. It's always a fun night.
Do you sort of feel it build up towards midnight as it gets closer and closer?
Oh, look, Robbie, you don't feel a build up the entire night, but you certainly feel one in the last sort of 10 minutes before that clock hits midnight. It's exciting.
As everyone's jostling for a spot.
Yeah, totally. And everyone kind of crowds in more, you know, gets closer to the bridge, closer to the water for the best vantage point. And
it's incredible that these shots of light all over the harbour sky can bring so many people together.
It's great. I love it. It's really nice. And you end up talking to so many people that you don't know on the night too, which is really lovely.
Well, later we'll have the description of the fireworks. But first, I wanted to introduce you to Mr. Fireworks himself.
You mean Fortunato Forti, fireworks director for Sydney New Year's Eve, right?
You know everything, Nass. Look, maybe he can tell you a thing or two you don't know about fireworks. I had a chat to him just the other day. Forge, what made you decide, yes, fireworks are what I want to work with? I imagine you were pretty young at the time.
Yeah, look, legally I've been doing it for 30 years, legally. probably made my first firework when I was 12. Just don't tell my father that. Because he doesn't know as yet that I did.
It's a family business, isn't it?
Look, yeah, look, I'm seventh generation fireworks, so it's been dated back to 1793.
Wow.
Obviously not all in Australia, back in Italy to start with. Three generations here in Australia. And, look, it's fireworks as a passion. It's generally a family-orientated business because it's passed down from generation to generation. It's not something that you can learn at university or TAFE, so it's a good business to be in.
It's very much a craft, isn't it? So what actually goes into making a firework? I imagine it's very dangerous.
Yeah, if you can see my finger, I burnt that yesterday. Look, now, you know, fireworks, they say it's a mixture of both science and art. The science comes into the manufacturing of the fireworks. We work with probably 40 to 50 different types of chemicals that create the different colours that you see. And that, with paper, we create the spheres and cylindrical fireworks that make the fireworks.
How many of you have you got making fireworks at one time? Because it's such a huge event, Sydney New Year's Eve every year. You must have a huge team.
Yeah, look, New Year's Eve, Sydney requires a crew of on-site only, if we just talk on-site first, of 50 people over a 10-day period that will assemble the fireworks onto the barges, the bridges, the opera house, and everywhere else that we put fireworks. And they'll work non-stop for 10 days doing that. Prior to that, it's probably 8 months in the making. With the manufacturing of the fireworks, as well as the preparation of all the fireworks, because obviously every firework has a particular queue. There's in excess of 13,000 queues in this particular show. So every firework has its own label, its own queue, so it knows when it goes off in the sky. And it's 18 computers that will trigger the whole show. So it's a lot of work, and all for 12 minutes. Go figure.
I'm a massive numbers nerd, so let's talk numbers. How many shells have we got? How many fireworks have we got? How many kilos of gunpowder is in here?
Okay, we the total weight, we have 18 shipping containers of equipment that that are used to put the New Year's Eve fireworks display together. There's 7 ton of explosives in that mix. As I said, 50 guys working for 10 days, 18 laptop computers, 60 kilometres of cable to interface the fireworks with the computers, and a partridge in a pear tree.
That's what we have coming up at 12 o'clock. Forch, thanks so much. We're counting down to the midnight fireworks now. It's all very exciting. All the best for 2014 and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you and everyone listening.
And that's a wrap for the first part of the 2013 Sydney New Year's Eve commentary.
But it's not the end.
No, it's not. The big event is still to come.
Yep, Robbie and I will be back at 11:30 to take you through to the midnight fireworks and beyond.
When we come back, we'll take a look behind the scenes to see what it actually takes to put on Australia's biggest event.
And we'll also look at the image that captures the imagination of Sydney, the bridge effect.
For now, please enjoy your regular 2RPH programming. We'll be back at 11:30.